Yes, it definitely will, but that's something that we really, the planners need to look towards and get solved, because for a place that has the amount of roads that we have and for the size, there should be room for people walking and cycling. You know, not to mention the cost that owning a car or believing that you have to get a car in order to get to work is another problem altogether. I want to touch this whole idea of COVID. I want us, me and you, to go through some questions here in regards to our tourism and COVID and how we operate with it based on, let's say, the vaccine. Now, based on what you've heard, I don't know, I know what I have heard, but I don't know what you information you've come across. But the saying is that when you get the vaccine, it won't stop you from catching COVID. All it's going to do is minimize the seriousness of, you know, whatever complications it brings on. And bearing that in mind, would the idea of going back to the 14 days when you land on the island be the ideal thing then?
I don't know. I have always, I think that I would need to be guided by science in that regard. I heard what you said. I heard people saying it. I've heard it being tossed about in Europe, you know, and in the United States regarding what the impact of this vaccine is. Frankly, I don't know. I do feel that one of the solutions would be for us to vaccinate everyone. But yes, I agree with you that there needs to be some variation to the whole idea of coming to Barbados and being able to leave for after 3 days. What I'm told now is that it's now up to 5 days. And I think that that is reasonable, because 5 days, from what the doctors say, is enough time for a person who catches COVID in flight for it to manifest itself. And, you know, that would make a lot of sense.
Right. So which then means that if we go with that, then we have to make sure that security is tight, to make sure that the person don't feel that they need to go drink a bank's beer, so they need to hop a wall, or, you know, leave their room, whatever the case may be.
But isn't that already being done?
The idea of having the tags. That they've introduced the tags and they've tightened security. So we would have to hope that these measures work, because as it stands, we know at the moment, tourism, we are relying heavily on tourism, which at the moment now, again, is dead in the water. I guess it's going to be a very rough learning curve for us.
But I don't think that we should beat up ourselves too much, because it appears as though everybody having it rough. I mean, St. Kitts and Nevis is the only country that I haven't heard about in the Caribbean that hasn't had an outbreak on the second wave, because St. Kitts closed on the borders for a very, very long time, and they just reopened with a 14-day quarantine, which I personally thought was excessive. What St. Kitts has not had, however, is they haven't had a revenue flow. I mean, we had a bit of a revenue flow over Christmas from tourism, but they are in a position where they are able to support the population more or less on their own, because you're only talking about 40,000 people. The challenge is that as countries get bigger, it's hard to do that. And I don't know that we are really in a position to do that. So I don't think we should beat up ourselves. I feel that we are managing it with reasonable competence. But as you said, it's rough and it's a learning curve. And there's no manual for this. There's no book you can look in to say, okay, in 1917, how was it done and how do you do this now? You know, tourism is heavily dependent on people, and it's heavily dependent on people socializing. When you tell people to come to Barbados but don't socialize, they could as well don't come. If you tell people to come to Barbados but lock up themselves in a room for 14 days, they're not going to come, you know, unless they have a compelling reason to come.
Right. So we should probably then focus on people who could come for longer periods, and for the time being, just focus on persons who can come for longer periods.
But is that not what we're doing? But that's what we're doing. With the welcome staff.
Right. So rather than focus on those who want to come for 2 weeks, so a fellow that come in for a year, 14 days is nothing. A fellow that come for a week, 5 days is a long time. 5 days is a lifetime if you come for 2 weeks or for a week.
Yeah.
So we need to release our focus on the short-term tourism and just focus on long-term.
I think we are doing now. Yeah.
Yeah, because they're going to spend more money, for sure. Mm-hmm. And more than likely, they're not going to be in all-inclusive properties. where everything is internal, or mostly everything is internal, and hardly anything is spent on the outside. So this is where we should focus, but should put our focus maybe for the next couple of years, because I don't see, I don't want to be negative, but I really don't see a fast recovery as far as this whole COVID situation is. I don't think we have really seen the full extent of the fallout.
And I couldn't agree with you more. That I think it's gonna get worse and worse before it gets better. And yeah, we gotta buckle in, because it's gonna be a long haul, you know.
Yes.
Are you in a situation where you're likely to be affected by the lockdown, or you can work from home?
No, I am actually going to be affected very heavily from the lockdown because I'm in production, and production times are between 10 to 12 hours a day. So I don't see how we're going to get. And there are a lot of projects on the horizon to be shot in Barbados, and now we are kind of like in a limbo situation. Serious limbo.
This is video production.
Yes, video and movies, that kind of stuff. And we've even been the Saint Kitts have actually beat us out on a project right now. You know,
because of the fact that they can shoot, they have more liberal times.
Exactly. Yeah. And their quarantine period was stringent, so they're protecting their ends, so people can come in and be safe, and then they can go about and have the production done. So it's a struggle. It's going to be a struggle. Most people in production are struggling. Makeup artists, fashion designers, all these parts that work. You know, a production can a movie can employ as much as 15,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see 10 or 12 people in front of the camera, but the behind the camera is where the employment really is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have makeup artists in Barbados who are struggling, you know, literally struggling.
No, it's a struggle all around, and I can understand the services sector, which is pretty much Barbados is what 70 or 80% of our economy is services. The services sector is taking a serious battering from the person who works in a restaurant to yourself. I mean, all of us offer services. I'm in the services sector as well. But fortunately, my service is the type of service I can offer at a distance. And, you know, I've been able to find a way to navigate the peculiarity of not being able to be physically in these different places and to continue working. But it's not as easy when you are offering the kind of service that you yourself are offering. You can't do that at a distance. You know, so it's rough. But sir, I like you hope that things will improve and that you can get back to work probably in 2 or 3 weeks' time. Let's hope. And if it causes a slowdown, at least it wouldn't cause a discontinuation altogether. Yeah.
Yeah, well that's a bit tricky based on, you know, the company and their projections or whatever the case may be. So
Okay, sir, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your sharing on this issue, and I wish you all the best as we proceed into lockdown number 2. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Hey, morning, how are you doing?
Not too bad, how are you?
I'm good.
All right.
I'm blessed.
Our paths haven't crossed since BCC. That's a long time. And I'm going to take you down a bit of nostalgia, but first I want to say something. In all of this, the whole of this situation, a recurring question keeps popping to mind. You know that the message is very important, but so is the messenger. Would you agree?
Agree fully, yes, sir.
Yeah. Now, the problem that I have sometimes is that the persons who are delivering the messages, they're either speaking over the heads of most people or the section of the population that they should be targeting, or it is the wrong person to deliver that type of message. I know the Prime Minister is doing a pretty good job. She's charismatic and she's well-versed in her diction, body language, you know, facial expression and so on. But sometimes when I look at other persons in this COVID environment, you know, they're sterile, they're stiff, they're speaking. They're not misspeaking, but the language and the tone, you know, it's not quite there. I don't know if other persons out there would care to comment after, but that's my take. But I want to take you down a bit back to BCC.
But sir, before we go to BCC, sir, I don't think that there are many people that would disagree, or there are many people who would fight with a suggestion that Prime Minister Motley is easily one of the most effective, if not the most effective, communicator in the Caribbean today, right? And that's not something you can learn. That is something that you have, and clearly she has it. So we can accept that. The challenge, I think, however, is that in Barbados, the bar has been set so high by her that we expect that everyone that speaks to us and everyone that communicates with us will communicate with us as well as she can, or alternatively, that she will communicate with us all the time. And I think that in both instances, those are a bit unreasonable. I remember when she was unwell and she had to have an operation, and Minister Bradshaw was acting. People were constantly comparing Santia with Mia and saying, well, you know, Mia's talked to people so, and why you can't. And I'm saying, like, you got to be understanding that you're dealing with two different people. And I think what Prime Minister is trying to do in terms of this COVID situation is trying to create a communication structure that can operate independent of her. And I say, good on you for doing that. The problem is that it's not going to happen when, whether you have Liz Thompson, whether you have Richard Carter, whoever you have, people are going to constantly say, well, I really prefer to hear it from her. It creates problems because it has to operate independently. So I hear you, sir. I think that they're communicators and they're communicators. And I feel that she's blessed in that regard, that she's one of the best. The problem is that we have to be careful in Barbados that we don't judge every other communicator by her expectations. It's the same thing in radio. You know, David Ellis is one of the longest standing journalists in this country, you know, and he went to a press conference the other day and he shook up things, you know, well and good. But the expectation that people have, and I'm reading people on the blogs and so on, commenting and saying on Facebook and whatnot, commenting and saying that the other journalists have to perform at that standard. And I'm saying that it's hard to say to a journalist who is fresh out of Barbados Community College that we expect that you're going to be able to ask probing questions and so on in the way that David Ellis does. Because the fact of the matter is that you can't judge everyone by Ellis's standard. And Ellis is the most senior journalist in this country, you know? So I feel that we have to give people the opportunity to grow in posts and to grow with opportunities. And I find that the press, junior members of the press, get a really, really hard time from people in Barbados because of the expectations that are in many instances unrealistic. All right, so we could go to BCC now.
Yeah, I was looking back at our graduation, 1988, the class and so on. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can still put your hand on that, but I realized that that graduation had a lot of talent. I know you would have received a special prize for, mm-hmm. you know, for your work on the campus, Douglas mm-hmm. Frederick, the magistrate, Trevor Prescott. I remember some of the debates that you would have had with Chris Sinclair, Ronald Nurse. Mm-hmm. You know,
that's right.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I don't remember Colin Jordan being there because he was accounting mm-hmm. and finance and whatever. William Dugate, he was there. I know, I remember seeing him. He was biology. So it goes down the thing, you know, Michael Lashley, you know, quite a few. So I'm saying that year, just putting you back in thing, that year, that graduation class,
that was of talent. That was a hell of a year, boy. I can tell you, yes, it's true. I mean, right, they went on to university, and people like Juliette Bynoe joined us, and she's now the executive director of Queen Elizabeth Hospital.
Right, so, you know me. Yeah. So I was just looking through, what is interesting, sir,
is how our politics have converged and diverged.
Of course.
Because the politics of the day was very simple, because everybody was a Dem. Everybody was singing our Barbara's praises and so on, and the People's Parliament, which assembled on the steps at the BCC was all about the Dipper and Narrowborough, and it was very anti-Barbados Labour Party. And it's fascinating over the years how the politics of everyone has diverged and in some instances converged over that time. And then you got people like me now who are neither fish fowl nor good red herring where politics is concerned. So interesting times, but yeah.
Yeah, true. But I one thing that stuck out for me, I'm gonna close or let somebody. I don't know if you remember that, a discourse that on the same steps that you had with Don Marshall, because he is of that same, he's of our graduation class, you know.
That's
that
right.
Was interesting discourse between you and Don Marshall, and I know Chris Sinclair, you know, and Michael Lashley and so on, they would have weighed in. So would have Douglas Frederick, you know. So it's an interesting it's an interesting thing. You know, I just happened to come across my our graduation class, and I said, whoa, you know, we got 10 people there who are in public life in significant ways, one or another, whether they are in governance, whether they're like you, you know, in your chosen field. So I just wanted to carry you back down.
It's interesting.
At some point in time, I will see if I can get this reproduced. I'll let you get a copy. You know?
But I would appreciate that very much. And I think that we can't let that moment pass without mentioning the fact that many of us were taught by Sir Lloyd Sandiford, who went on to become Deputy Prime Minister and subsequently Prime Minister. Many of us were taught by William Chandler, who is now the Honorable Justice William Chandler. Lorianne Smith was part of that group, and now she is herself Justice Smith. So the distinction continues. So I'm happy to be associated with it. I think the PISA was a few years behind,
Right. Okay,
all right, sir.
You have a good morning.
Thanks a lot for calling. Good memories. Thanks a lot. Take care. Down to Brass Tacks, 4341790. This is the number that you can call. I had a comment here from Kimar Safri, who is, of course, doing a lot of good work with homeless persons. Is asking if during lockdown, if people are allowed to be on the road between 6 and 7, there are a number of people who are calling asking about clarity. Can you be on the road between 6 and 7 during the lockdown for, of course, legitimate purposes? And there would need to be some clarity on that. 4341790, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, good, cool. No. I observed the DLP viability is being question. I think rightly so. Because if you look at the LP over time, you see they're quite questionable. Between 1991 and 2021, about a 30-year period or so, at least 30 DLP candidates had issues with the party. Right? The last Prime Minister Stewart, he had issues with the party. Serious issues, right? There were two who were threatened with the selection, and 23 others actually leave the party, right? This is a fact. So when you look at all these issues with the DLP, including in this 23, it has four left the party. Tends to St. George North by election, you know. This is to me is really, really, really significant. The Verlin, Ms. Verlin, the pizza, like, brushed that aside, and she think that, and that's a big thing. But even, when you look at Mr. Aline, youngster Aline, I think he was the brightest star in the DLP. I think he was actually the brightest star. But what is noteworthy as well, Mr. Reefer ran in the said by election in St. George. But you know what? Mr. Lee Reefer now is appointed as a cricket coach for the Caribbean. He said he was in it for the long haul. He's a cricket coach now for the West Indies again. This should have even, when they were critical of this Moore being, like, she can't serve two masters at the same time. They were even cognizant that Reefer was a cricket coach. Look, no, couple of 2 months later, he gone out to be a cricket coach. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying when you look at a DLP, the DLP is a party that is basically struggling. Like in 19, when they separate significantly at the polls in 1999, ended up with two people. The two people that were left remaining, they even on speaking terms. Now you got the bloat here now in 2018, when they lose all the candidates, and as a result, they lose the share of the subvention. So I'm saying that this is a struggling party. Now, I would like to touch also on Sunday Brassat's calling for with the what you call the minority parties. Now, mm-hmm. you said from day one that they will not have any impact on Barbados landscape. But I realize now, finally now, when you said some of them, like Gibson, them even leave from the PDP, say he really got a future with them. They don't have any future. So what you call them? Monday morning quarterbacks or something?
Quarterbacks.
So with your fellas, they're now saying the same thing. Don Marshall and all of these guys. Mm-hmm. But you were saying this from day one. Day one you were saying it. I heard, but to go back to the Sunday Brassat, I was really shocked when I heard Mr. Avery. Someone called Mr. Avery. He said, "Man, you will never live in a seat." And he interjected the caller. I said to the caller, I would like to remind you that I won a seat in 1999. That was when he won against Barbara. Never won that seat. What he failed to understand was that was a swing. That was a swing. He won it on a swing. They only had two people in
power. But is it that he won the seat or is it that I'm saying it's whether he won the seat or whether Owen Arthur won it. And I am more inclined to think that it may very well have been Owen Arthur.
But this is the point that I'm making.
Yeah.
On Arthur's coattail, called the next 2003 election, he hanged on for daylight by the bare 117 votes. Now, he just went back here again. He was out in the wilderness, political wilderness, for 10 years in the DLP rule. And he just came back on again. He said similar situation on Miss Morley's coattail, long coattail.
We will see what happens after the next election. Because I realize that what has happened basically is that people like Paul Gibson want to be in politics, and they're realizing that the PDP is no longer a vehicle to which they can hitch themselves to take them into politics. So they're looking around. The PDP, I guess if the PDP was able to get its hands on the kind of resources that they were hoping for, if they were able to get the subvention, they could have done more to keep the interests of people who were hoping that they could come in and get some footing. But the PDP is an interesting party for me because it's a party that claims to be serious about gaining office. But the two senatorial positions it holds in Barbados, which is part of the benefit of being in opposition, are being held by two people that have no interest in gladiatorial or active politics.
No.
So the female senator, she has made it clear that she's not running for a seat. And Caswell has made it clear that he's not running for a seat either. So my thing is that if you are a serious political party and you're not just there to pick up a subvention, as many people believe you are, or to pick up a salary, the question then is, you know, what exactly are you doing with these people in representing you in the Senate? When neither of them are really interested in getting you in politics, should you not vacate those Senate positions and put people in there who are, like you, interested in serious politics or serious elective politics? Either that or you just decided that, you know what, you're going to hang on for 5 years, and if the time comes, then you will just draw your pension like everybody else.
You will lose the deposit in the next general election. You will lose it, you know? So I actually, at first, I didn't really want to call the program, but I tried getting it, and I didn't get it. Because I would have questions, because you saying, well, how he doing this with democracy? So I was, like, the questions I had for him, why did you wait till after the cabinet was announced, right, to then switch to opposition leader? Why did after Mr. Eastman said he can't get the 150,000 subvention, that he then hurriedly went and formed a party? I mean, come on, is this thing crystal clear?
Because the democracy was democracy? Yeah.
Democracy what? All right, nice to hear you again, man.
All right, good to hear you. Thanks a lot for calling. Take care. That was my good political friend, the Economist, and we are on Down to Brass Tacks. Remember, we continue until 2. We take a break at 12. We go to the regional roundup. 12:30, we go to the latest news. Myself and Dennis Johnson, the number is 434-1790. You can call us. You can also email me directly on peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. Good morning, Peter. I was wondering if you have or can direct me to information about how one who is leaving the country can acquire the required COVID-19 antigen test to travel to the United States. I was on the Barbados GIS website, but it is no longer there. I've called several polyclinics, even the Barbados lab, but either there's no answer or the person answering does not know. Many thanks. As far as I know, you call the COVID hotline and you're put through to one of the polyclinics and you are arranging to take a test. So I would suggest that you call one of the polyclinics directly, the one that's closest to you, and see what can be done regarding scheduling that test. David, my dignity and the war must go on. Two legendary calypsos written by Tobago Crusoe, immortalized in song by the now late singing Sandra. Well said.